To Egypt now. The images of brutality are grim. 74 Egyptians dead, but the scene is not Tahrir Square in Cairo, but a soccer field in the Egyptian city of Port Said. A riot at a soccer match between the team from Port Said and a team from Cairo is responsible for those fatalities and a number of injuries. But the events have sent shockwaves deep into Egyptian society, already reeling from political chaos. It's a developing story this morning. Some of the victims from the violence in Port Said are returning to Cairo. Investigations have been called for, and accusations that the violence was actually a setup have been reverberating all day long. Joining us now from Cairo is John Lyne, correspondent for our partner, the BBC. What's the latest, John?
Well, at the moment, demonstrators are gathering. A number of separate demonstrations leaving from the Al Ahli Stadium, which is here in the center of Cairo, heading off to Tahrir Square and then on to the Interior Ministry. At the same time, a very lively debate has been going on inside the newly elected, newly democratic parliament, where the Prime Minister Kamal Ghansouri has announced that they've sacked the complete board of the Egyptian Football Association and also accepted the resignation of the governor of Port Said. That won't satisfy anybody. People here are furious, particularly, obviously, supporters of Al-Ahli and the relatives of those killed, but also many Egyptians criticising, at the very least, the deep incompetence of the police and the interior minister, or at worst, a conspiracy by hand or hands unknown.
Now, Al-Ahli, that's the name of the Cairo team that was in Port Said, right?
That's right.
Right, and Al-Masri was the Port Said team. Now, is there any interpretation of this violence that could have come from some sort of long-standing rivalry just between the two teams and that there's a limited, wider political significance here?
Well, of course it's possible. Yes, that's quite true. Egyptian football fans are violent. They do have confrontations, and these two teams have a long and bitter rivalry. But to start with, there simply weren't enough police at the ground and they weren't well enough equipped. And we've all seen television pictures of them just really the police just looking hapless and bewildered in the middle of the ground while the confrontation began, making some efforts, but clearly not enough. So at the very least, there weren't enough police there and they weren't well equipped enough to deal with the trouble. But the conspiracy theories go much wider than that, saying perhaps this was a setup. Perhaps it wasn't even supporters of Al-Masri, the Port Said team who rushed on the ground, but troublemakers, agents provocateurs, people in there to make trouble. And also people have pointed out that, of course, the supporters weren't checked thoroughly as they went to the ground. So some seem to have brought in weapons, knives and clubs and so forth. So that's how the conspiracy theory goes. It's not so outlandish. The ultras, the supporters of Al-Ahli, as they're known, have been very politically active. They've been at the forefront of the demonstrations. They've been often involved in confrontations with the police over the last year. So that's why a lot of people think, oh, maybe somebody somewhere wants to take revenge.
Ah, so revenge would be one aspect of the conspiracy. What I've also heard this morning is that somehow, according to members of the Muslim Brotherhood, that it's in the military's interest to allow chaos to develop, and that would justify some sort of a crackdown. Can you evaluate that proposition?
Well, the military's possibly, or I think the conspiracy really goes, former supporters of the former regime, former President Mubarak, troublemakers, and by all accounts there are still plenty of them around in this country, who would have an interest in trying to reduce the country to chaos, sabotaging the transition so they can say, we told you so, Hosni Mubarak always said that I'm just keeping order here and without me it'll be chaos, and here it is, he's gone, that's what's happened. And I suppose ideally for them in this scenario, eventually the country pleads for the return of the former regime, or at the very least the old hands can say, we told you so, the country's been reduced to chaos, and any kind of idea of democracy and justice and so on goes out the window.
Any of that sentiment in Tahrir Square today? You mentioned a number of demonstrators have come here in response to those events. I'm wondering if there are any who are fed up with the chaos in addition to those who are calling for investigations.
Plenty are fed up with the chaos, and of course that's part of the whole. If somebody were trying to sow chaos, that would be the whole point. You, obviously, the Al-Ahli supporters, those going and demonstrating, are opposed to that scenario. But you know, other people in Egypt shaking their heads and saying, oh, well, it's just foreigners. It's just these troublemaking liberals and democratic activists. They're all funded by foreign governments anyway, and they should just let us get on with our lives. It's their fault. They're the ones really behind this trouble. That would be the scenario, as painted, as ideally, if there were people out there trying to create chaos, that's what they'd like to have people saying.
John Lyne, correspondent for our partner, the BBC, live in Cairo this morning as 74 Egyptians killed in Port Said after a soccer match developed into a complete riot, charges and countercharges against security forces. You know, looking at a picture of some of the police in Port Said and noting, as you have a moment ago, that, you know, they seem just, you know, not of this world, almost comatose, really not responding to the situation on the ground. Step back for a moment. I mean, does this represent a sense of paralysis throughout the country, throughout the authorities, throughout the institutions that make them unable to deal with the events like this?
Absolutely. And I think that's really the story of what's been going on in Egypt in the last year, whether or not these troublemakers are there as well, that the government has been paralysed. The military, who've taken over control of the country, and the civilian governments, the very weak civilian governments they've appointed underneath them, have not been willing to take any of the tough decisions that need to be taken, whether it's sorting out the economy or sorting out things like the interior ministry, who run the police. The police got deeply demoralised. They were notorious under Hosni Mubarak. They were chased off the streets during the revolution. But they've been waiting for leadership. And if you speak to police, obviously they don't want to be the villains of the peace. They would like to be reorganized, sent out, you know, with new uniforms, as it were, and regain the respect of the Egyptian people. But there has not been the leadership. The people who've been leading the interior ministry have been old figures from the Mubarak era, perhaps not as tarnished, but certainly not ones willing to really take those sweeping steps to reform the police that were seen to be necessary a year ago. And that's the case in so many other areas of Egyptian life: broadcasting, state broadcasting, the way the economy is run, the way agriculture is run, the way the transport is run. The country is just running on, I'd say, autopilot. But if it is, it's a very faulty autopilot.
Well, finally, before we go, any update on the situation of those 17 foreigners, including possibly as many as 10 Americans who have been prohibited from leaving the country, people who are working for NGOs?
Yes, well, some of those Americans, we don't know precisely how many, have taken refuge in the U.S. embassy. The row continues, and it's a deepening row between the United States and Egypt, with the Egyptian authorities investigating, it's not alleged, it's known and publicized, foreign funding of various groups, including American groups like the National Democratic Institute and so forth, and refusing to allow Americans and Europeans involved with those institutes to leave the country. It's a very bitter argument that's souring relations between Egypt and the United States at this crucial time.
Another sense of the tension and chaos throughout Egypt as it takes steps towards democracy. John Lyne there, correspondent for our partner, the BBC, live in Cairo. Thanks as always, John.
My pleasure.